Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show Jason Silverman. Jason is a very interesting guy. He is a martial arts master instructor and information marketer, a marketing expert and coach. He's a sought-after speaker. He's the CEO of Powerful Words Character Development and the co-founder of Dance Sites Done Right and All-Star Cheer Sites. And he's known for his no BS yet supportive approach to helping entrepreneurs and their businesses to thrive. And we all need that. Jason's out-of-the-box powerful marketing and business systemization. I always want to add a T in there. Business systemization strategies have proven successful for the growth of not only the Powerful Words Character Development System, which, by the way, is now being implemented in over 500 schools in 10 different countries, very powerful stuff, but also in the success that his clients experience in their own businesses. Jason has been a featured expert at the Martial Arts Super Show, the Dance Teacher Summit, ASGA Conference, USA Gymnastics National Conference, USA Gymnastics Regional Congress, and the U.S. Swim School Association's International Convention. Wow, my tongue got tired. In the information marketing world, he has shared the stage with marketing legends Dan Kennedy and Bill Glazer, at the Glazer Kennedy Info Marketing Summit. Always wanted to go there. Have not made it, but I've always wanted to go there, and I'm going to ask him about that. He has been, he's been a martial arts master instructor. We went over that. So anyway, I duplicated my little information there, so I'm so sorry. Good morning, Jason. Welcome to Your Partner in Success. I am going to pick your brain. I hope you're ready.
I am ready. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here today.
Oh, I'm delighted that you're here. I mean, I've been following you around a bit. You know, we have mutual friends in common, and I'm very impressed with all of the things that you do. Your websites are fabulous. I'm a web developer, so anytime I come across a website that makes me go, "Oh, how did they do that?" I'm impressed. Before we get started, can you tell people a little bit about yourself that I might have missed and where they can find you on
sure.
the internet?
Thank you. Absolutely. Well, I started the whole entrepreneurial thing after I did the real job thing. After graduating business school, you know, I did what everybody was supposed to do with a ridiculously expensive degree, and, you know, I went to go work in high finance, which was a phenomenal experience. You know, I started out as a financial analyst and then moved over and traded municipal bonds for a good 9 years, which, you know, wasn't really reality. You know, every morning you wake up and they give you, you know, $20 or $50 million worth of credit to spend of somebody else's money, and you basically go out and gamble all day long, which was, you know, it was fun for a time. It was super high stress. I made a ton of money. I liked that part. However, I really didn't enjoy what I was doing because it was a zero-sum game, which meant that if I had to win, somebody else had to lose. And for my personal philosophy has always been everything should be win-win. If I'm going to do something, it should be a win for me. It should be a win for the other guy or gal. So that was a big challenge for me. And, you know, one day I woke up and I just couldn't do it anymore. And I said to my wife, who was finishing her PhD in child development at the moment, you know, so she wasn't working.
She just wasn't bringing in money.
Exactly.
Right.
She You know, she had looked at me and said, you know, you just seem so unhappy. We have a home. We got plenty of money in the bank. We don't have kids yet. If you want to make a change, you know, I'm 100% behind you. Do what's going to make you happy. And, you know, I really credit that conversation for changing my entire world and our world, really. I've been a martial artist my whole life. You know, I'd always been teaching, I guess for the last 7 or 8 years, I'd been teaching a small group of people. I had a nice following. And I just said, you know, I want to do that. I want to make a difference in people's lives. And, you know, so I took my wonderful degree in finance and all my business acumen, and I traded it all in and opened a martial arts academy and started rolling around on the ground with kids in my pajamas. So, and I was never happier.
I bet.
You know, I went from there. You know, we opened a school, and we limped along for the first maybe 11 months because I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know how to get there. So, and I was stubborn, which came with the job in high finance. So It took me about a year, close to a year, to shrug that off. The whole time, though, we realized we wanted to really make this huge impact on people's lives. And quite honestly, just teaching somebody how to hurt another person doesn't do that, doesn't accomplish that goal. I knew that martial arts was supposed to teach personal development, but the way I'd grown up in it, that really wasn't a component. So I went out and I bought everything that was available out on the market. And gosh, I brought it home to my wife and she looked at it and said, wow, this has a lot of holes in it. I said, well, can you do better? She's like, I believe I can. And she took the next 2 years and built this personal development system that we started implementing in our school. And we watched our facility just explode. We became one of the top martial arts academies, first in our state, then in New England, and, you know, countrywide, we were really, really exploding. Fast forward, I wound up making a decision saying, gosh, I can impact about 300 kids' lives per month at my school, or I can impact, you know, a limitless number if we make this, if we allow this personal development system to spread. So I sold the school, kept the personal development system, and started marketing that within the martial arts industry. I think we launched it one night. I think we had 64 clients the next morning, which was really, really cool. And then a really interesting thing happened. We started realizing that regardless of what you think you teach, we were actually just teaching kids and teaching people. So it didn't matter if you were teaching martial arts or gymnastics or dance or cheer or swim or bowling or what have you. So we were able to actually take the business. I had built it really as a franchise prototype so that I could stamp it into whatever industry I wanted. And we just wound up exploding. So after that, I started getting an awful lot of inquiry from other business owners to say, you know, how did you do what you did?
Mm-hmm.
And quite honestly, and we can certainly talk in more depth as we go through, right. But, you know, I'm no rocket scientist. I don't believe that, you know, I did anything that was just so out of this world brilliant. What I did was, you know, I worked hard. I went and I learned from people who had done what I wanted to do, and they told me what to do, and I just did it. So
I doubt that it was that simple, but I really do doubt that it was that simple. It seems to me that you used an awful lot of common sense in what you did. But can I interrupt just a bit and ask if you could share some examples of the changes that you implemented before you went national, before you sold off the business? Because, the changes that you and your wife, I mean, some of the things that you might have done that made explosive change in what you were doing, because to me, and I'm listening to you, you're very self-deprecating about it, but you guys put together this thing and then watched and observed and learned from it and then took it out to a wider market. So that's pretty
smart. You bring up a really good point. We, you know, as far as smart things, the smartest thing we did was we tested. I am super attentive as far as testing. I test everything on our website, multivariate testing. On all of our marketing, we test, and we make slow, incremental changes. So
right.
It's no different. When you go to the doctor, I mean, I've got a 4-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son, so I'm at the pediatrician a lot. Well, I mean, they're, as far as I'm concerned, they go to school, and the school is like a petri dish.
It's like an incubator,
so,
I know.
it's
horrible.
They go, right? So we go to the doctor, and this is a perfect analogy for any business owner, or really anybody who's interested in success. You go, and they say, okay, so the child or the person is coughing, and they've got a sore throat and a headache, and they give them one protocol of medicine.
Mm.
If that doesn't work, they don't throw that whole protocol out. They tweak it just a teeny tiny bit. And they start shifting many variables. So maybe they remove the medicine for the headache, or maybe they remove the medicine for this and try one thing. The challenge most entrepreneurs have is that they do an ad, which probably sucks in the first place, but that's a completely different phone call. They do an ad, and then it doesn't work or doesn't work to their happiness. And all of a sudden, they throw that ad out, and they put something completely different in.
Yeah.
And they never had the opportunity to say, well, what if I change the headline? What if I change the image? What if I change the offer? What if I change some of the social proof? What if I change one of these things and then looked at it? Unfortunately, this takes time.
It does. And people, you know, think that they need to do it right then, right now. And if they don't have those 4 new signups in the morning or 100 signups by the end of the month, they're deeply disappointed. And you're right, they throw the baby out with the bathwater. I see it all of the time.
The challenge with that, though, is, and actually I shouldn't say it's a challenge, you can do that if you're not using the worst number in marketing, right? The worst number in marketing is always 1. If you're only doing one thing and it doesn't work, you got a big problem. That was the other thing. When our school exploded, you know, the first thing we did was I looked at what everybody else was doing, and I went the complete opposite direction. And if I could give one piece of advice to any entrepreneur out there, is look at what everybody else in your industry is doing and do something different. Because more often than not, the herd is wrong.
Yep.
The herd is
wrong. That's absolutely true. Who was it, one of the Carnegies or the Mellons, who years back, this is a famous quote, and I will attribute it to the wrong person, I'm sure. But he basically said, if your newspaper boy or your shoeshine boy are talking about stocks, sell. Get out now. And it makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. And that was, you know, I looked at all my competition. They were marketing, you know, the physical component or the thing of what they thought they were selling. And here's another speaking point. The biggest thing that made our school explode was I finally discovered what business I was in.
Oh.
Initially, I thought I was in the martial arts business because, you know, I ran a martial arts academy.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the business I was in. That was the vehicle I was using, but it wasn't the business I was in. So you got to ask yourself, what business are you in? For me, I was in the life-changing business. That was all I was in because I knew that somebody came in and I realized what my product was. Most people don't know what their product is either. I mean, unless you like sell grapefruit on the side of the road, then that's your product.
Right.
But for us, what I realized the product was the feeling that those kids or those students walked off the floor and out of my door with. That was the product. Because if they walked out with a bad feeling, they're one day closer to quitting. If they walked out with a great quitting, they're one day closer to achieving their goals.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and really, that is so true, because if you have chronically poor experiences with whatever it is that you're attempting to do or whatever it is that you're attempting to learn or be taught, you're just not going to succeed at it. Your mind will shut down and you'll seek another form. You will go somewhere else where you're emotionally attached to it, you're physically attached to it. You know, all of the things that make us up from, you know, just being little blobs of flesh into full human beings. I mean, you have to engage your mind, body, and soul, don't you?
Absolutely. If you're truly creating an experience for your people, and this is the other thing. I never looked at my clients as quote-unquote clients. Mm-hmm. And actually, this is one minor deviation, but for those of you who haven't taken a look, Google the definition for customer and Google the definition for client. Okay, first of all, define which one you want, because there's a massive difference between the two. And when you start thinking of your people as clients, you're already 300% ahead of the game. But we wanted to take it one step further, and I didn't look at my people as clients. I looked at them as family members.
Oh.
So we treated.
I understand that because my business operates that way. We're all, you know, we exchange Christmas gifts. I mean, we're all very, very close. They're my clients. But they are also such a huge part of my daily existence that I can't classify them as clients.
Of course they are. And the minute somebody becomes a family member,
mm-hmm.
purely from a retention perspective, it's way harder for them to unplug. It's more unlikely that they're going to want to unplug. So it's how do you treat your clients? What systems do you have in place to ensure that the client experience is fabulous from their first inquiry call to the 30th time they recommit to being a client?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know that you have done a great job of systematizing your business. I don't know why I can't say that word. I'm losing you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. Sorry about that. So I didn't want to interrupt you, but you said something that I really wanted to kind of latch on, and that is creating these systems where your clients always know how important they are to you. And what prompted you to do that? What kind of aha moment did you have where you said, you know, each experience has to be a touch point. Each experience has to be the best that they can possibly expect.
Well, I had a client who, and she really started as a client because this was just a disaster of a person, and I really didn't see her staying very long. So she'd come in. She had a tough family life, and it was just a bad scene, and she didn't want to be there. Her parents brought her in, and one day, you know, she was 9 years old, this girl, and I show up to the school, and she's sitting there on the doorstep, you know, just sobbing, and, well, gosh, you know, this is odd and relatively uncomfortable, but okay. Opened the door and brought her in and just said, tell me what's going on. What can I do to help? And she's like, she starts telling me this horrible story about what's going on in her family and divorce and all that stuff. And she looked at me. She's like, this is really the only good family I have.
Oh.
And it hit me that, oh my goodness, we're not just doing this thing I thought we were doing. We're really changing lives, and we're giving this girl an opportunity that she'd never have otherwise. So that really changed it for me, and it changed the way I looked at every single person who ever came into my door or called on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted
the
opportunity.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted the opportunity to, selfishly speaking, I loved that feeling of knowing that I was making a difference.
I don't think it's selfish. I think it's what inspires you to do what you do. I don't find it selfish at all.
No, it's just a nicer way to be driven. You know, I've been a competitor my whole life, and you know, you can compete the money way, and that's fine. I've been there and done that. Now it's like, well, gosh, can we impact 1 million kids a month? Can we impact 5 million kids a month? What else can we do, and what bigger ways can we do that? And you know, when I think about the clients that I work with, I know that by helping them, they're actually going to help me achieve my goal.
Mm-hmm.
So if I know that I'm working with a client who's got 10,000 clients or 5,000 clients, that's 5,000 more kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily get a chance to be that person for them, but I know that in some way we're providing life lessons that are going to change their lives forever.
And that's a very powerful point to work from, I think. I mean, yes, you want the things that come to you as a result of it, that, you know, the feeling that you're really doing something that is excellent in the world, something that you can be very proud of, you're making good money doing it. We all want that. I think that's why we all go into business. At least, I mean, I hope that's why we all go into business. I think we go into business. Yeah, we want to make money. We want to make a good living, but we also want to bring our genius and our skills and our assistance to people who can use it. I mean, why keep it to yourself?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So how did you, so when was the point that you realized that you really needed to systematize your business? There's actually two spellings, so I flip between the two of them.
And,
you know, bring in more people, because clearly, and I'm just kind of reading between the lines here, but I'm thinking that your goal was to impact as many people in a very positive way as you could. And like you said, you can only reach about 3,000 people at a local level. But if you expand out, then you can, you know, impact a lot more people, because the business you're in is impacting, you know, how they live their lives, how they're physically able to do things, and, you know, how they're able to just create a different mindset, I think, from what I've been reading about you. But when did you know that you had to really systematize to make this work? Because you can't, we all do it. We hit a wall and we just cannot reach out anymore, because we don't have anything in place that allows us to do that.
Well, you know, this is a really important question you're asking. And I was starting to get burnt out with the school.
Mm-hmm.
I just was. It was, call it the year 2000. I was getting fried. And I just, I wasn't sure what to do. So I was actually heading out to a martial arts conference. The first big one I'd been to, in actually ever as an owner. And at the airport, I picked up this book that, you know, in the airport bookstore. I'm like, I'll take a look. I have a ferocious appetite for books. I try to read between 2 and 3 a week. And I always have. So,
me too.
I was there and I go, this book looks interesting. And it was The E-Myth Revisited. Hadn't heard too much about it.
Michael Gerber.
Yeah. And, you know, I got on the plane and I got off the plane and I was so bothered by what I read that I went to a public payphone. Remember when I had those?
Yeah.
I went to a payphone at Las Vegas McCarran Airport and I called and I enrolled in their mastery program.
Really?
Yeah, right then and there. Because, you know, I read this book and it was all about, you know, how these people are able to actually take a small business and why, what the value was to building systems around it. Because, you know, you can manage systems, you really can't manage people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was already starting to see that with some of the employees that I'd brought on. And I knew I needed a better way, and I knew that my way wasn't working. So, you know, I called and said, all right, how fast can I do this? I'm like, well, you know, it's usually like a 4 to 6 year program.
Whoa.
Well, I was kind of hoping I could be done tomorrow. And they're like, well, yeah, it doesn't really work that way. Patience was never one of my strong points. So I said, okay, I'm in. And I started out in this group coaching program. I think there were like 20-some-odd people in my group. I was the only one who actually eventually graduated, I think the last 2 years.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, it's not an easy road.
No, it's not. I know Michael Gerber, and no, it's not. It's not an easy thing to do.
And it was interesting. I went to business school, and you know, I did Harvard Business Case Studies, for years, where we ripped apart other people's businesses. For the first time, mm-hmm. I was actually ripping apart my own and seeing what wasn't working.
Ooh, I'm dying to hear about that one. I mean, did you have moments where you slapped yourself upside the head and went, what was I thinking?
Oh, at least on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
At least on a weekly basis, because I hadn't realized just how important some of the initial stuff was. You know, I understand, okay, we're going to create a system to clean the bathroom, and we're going to create a system to open up the school, and we're going to create a system to collect money. I get that. Like, and I think most business owners do.
Right, common sense. Yeah,
they may or may not have actually documented them at this point, but they get it. Some of the initial stuff that I fought vehemently against having to do was develop my primary aim, develop my, gosh, the primary aim was such a headache, my strategic objective. That one gave me nightmares for a good solid month. And really ripping apart, I mean, some people call this writing a business plan. Other people really understand that this is the nuts and bolts of what your business is going to look like when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, in essence, creating that first and then simply reverse engineering it and creating a roadmap for ourselves.
And I love that idea because if you can't, and I'm going to put it a little bit more simply, you can't hit a target you can't see.
Exactly.
You just can't. I mean, you're out there throwing stuff at the wall and just going, gee, that worked. Uh-oh, that one slid. Now what do we do? It's like, you've got to have a plan.
I think some of the most effective stuff for me was being able to know that I knew exactly on an hourly basis how many people I needed to enroll. So in order to hit my goal in 10 years, I knew that for every, you know, minute or hour that we were open, how many people did I need to enroll? Okay,
lovely.
So it's the second week of the first month of this quarter, and this is how many we need to hit in order to stay on track. It was very simple if I knew that, okay, so I know that I need to enroll 4 people per week. We're open 6 days a week. Okay, how many hours, you know, and then just do the math.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just a matter of continuously filling the top of the funnel and getting more people to know about what you do and bringing them in. You know, obviously we can talk about the client conversion problem that most businesses have, but this was, for me, it was revolutionary just to simply know, okay, in order to be here, I need to get this many people, and then at another point we need to talk about how we keep them. But that was...
Right.
That was phenomenal.
And a lot of people, I'm really stunned by how many people don't seem to grasp that. I mean, to me, it's kind of business 101. If you need to market, you need to have a funnel, you need to be constantly filling that funnel, and you need to make sure everybody in the funnel is very happy and they're bringing other people to you by referral.
Absolutely. I mean, but again, most people don't get into owning a small business to do math.
True.
They like to do the thing. So if you're not doing the thing, you know, I hear this at least 3 or 4 times a day from clients in the after school world where they say, I'm not really interested in dealing with the planning or the this or the that. I just want to teach the classes.
Okay, so I would love to hear your response to that. I know what mine would be. I can't wait to hear what your response to that is.
Well, my response is pretty simple. I'm like, well, actually, the reason, and this was drilled into me in business school, the reason you open a business is to create a better life for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then to eventually sell that business. And then move along. That's actually what you open a business for. Now, you may not have opened a business that way, but that's okay. My normal coaching on that is simply, if you want to be able to continue to have a business, there are certain things that you absolutely do need to do. You might not like those things. They might not be the fun parts, but they're the parts that actually make you successful. So why don't we take one step and do one of them?
Can you give us some for instances that people object to doing or just don't, they're not interested or it makes them feel
absolutely
a little crazy? I mean, you know, some people just, I can't do it, and they won't do it.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell people, listen, I need to understand, and you need to understand, because I get a lot of inquiry for people asking marketing questions. Mm-hmm. So I ask them to show me all their marketing systems and then their marketing analytics, which already starts to make them vomit. But
it's true.
Before we get to the school,
I'm laughing because I hear it all the time. My what? My
yeah,
what are you talking about?
I don't like analytics. Well, that's fine. The one thing I would say, though, is I always say, listen, what does it cost you to get a new client?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a very easy number if you're keeping track. So do you remember way back when everybody used the Yellow Pages?
Yes.
Okay, I'm probably dating myself here, but
no, and that thing still lands in my driveway, and I pick it up out of the driveway, and I put it straight into the dumpster.
Of course.
My little trash can out there. Nobody uses that. I don't know why people pay for you. I mean, I get it if you're a very large venue, like hotels or something, you know, because people do spend times in hotels, and they do need a Yellow Pages, although everybody has iPhones now. I don't see the Yellow Pages existing much longer, to be honest.
No, I mean, obviously they're making a push to do everything online. So, but as far as, you know, just from this perspective, you know, my Yellow Pages ad was $1,000 a month.
Whoa.
Well,
my heart
had,
just hurt for your bank account. Ow.
Nah, well, I mean, we did okay. Not to worry. but what we found was, and also know this, that I had very good analytics on what the return on investment was.
Mm.
So, and understanding that at $1,000 a month, if it enrolled one client who was worth $1,800 a year, I would do that all day long. So what we did was very simply, we knew, because we had metrics, so there was a different phone number that they would call. It was a metered line if they called from the Yellow Pages ad. We put different flags in our marketing to know what people were calling from. So, and we also asked, are you looking at the Yellow Pages right now? All right, which book is it? Okay, what page are you on?
Right.
What page are you on? So they would tell us, and it was very, very simple because now if I got 10 calls, okay, my $1,000 investment got me 10 calls, which meant it cost me $100 to make the phone ring per call. Okay. I now knew and could measure and gauge my various marketing activities. I did that for everything. If we did direct mail, if it was a $2,600 or $2,500 expense to do a 5,000-piece mailing and we got X amount, we would divide it and say, oh, okay, so the direct mail, it cost us $90 to make the phone ring.
Mm.
And then we'd look, you know, we'd go a step further. So, okay, so we spent this. Our conversion to clients was this. Okay, this is actually how much it costs us to acquire a client now, not just a lead. So I was pretty neurotic about that, and you know I used to run around with my little spreadsheets all over the place, and I knew every month and month to month and year over year what was working. And then I remember when the Yellow Pages rep came in, you know, for me to, you know, she came in, she's like, okay, are you ready to sign up for this year? I went, you know what? And I pulled out my spreadsheet and I pulled out my graphs that I made and said, you see this this big sliding chart and it's sliding the wrong direction?
Mm.
Yeah. It's that shows how much more expensive it is for me to get a client using your marketing systems. So I would just like to be listed in your book. I don't need the $1,000 ad anymore.
There you go. I have to wonder how many people, how many times she was faced with the facts. You know, this is what you are providing me. This is what I'm getting out of it or not getting out of it. And it's very, very important.
She'd never experienced that before.
I would think that she hadn't, and it was kind of a rhetorical question because, you know, I knew you were going to say that. I can't imagine that most people are aware of what they're getting. They're just putting it up there, and they're hoping. And hoping is not a business plan.
No, it's you know, I've heard the term. Well, we use the strategy of push. You know, pray until something happens. That's a horrible business strategy.
No kidding.
You know, it's like one of the things that you know all of my clients hear from me every single month is, "All right, show me your 15 by the 5th." And they know that I expect anybody who coaches with me, you need to show me the 15 marketing systems that you're implementing by the 5th of the month, every month. Now, if you're
doing
that.
Can you give us some examples? I mean, you know, I mean, I don't want you to give your system away, but can you give us one or two examples?
Yeah, there's no secret here. The only secret is actually having somebody do it. So, you know, for a martial arts school, some of the 15 systems would be something like, all right, lead generation-based website, online pay-per-click ads, online Google retargeting ads, Facebook pay-per-click ads, birthday parties, referral strategy, you know, any of those to get started with. Then it's lead cards, ad boxes, flyer drops, door hangers. So you have basic marketing mixed in with online marketing.
Right.
You should be everywhere. I believe in cross-pollination. I knew that I'd actually become successful at my school when people who came in to join couldn't actually tell me which way they found out about us. They'd say something like, well, gosh, you know, my daughter came to a birthday party here, but, you know, we also got a door hanger on our door last week, and actually every time I go to Dunkin' Donuts, I see her ad, those cards you have left out there, and when she was trick-or-treating 2 months ago, she got a free month certificate in her bag, and, you know, she's come to a buddy day a couple times here, plus we saw you guys were at the movie theater doing a presentation, and I believe you were also in her classroom, and people are like, well, so, you know, it was funny because I'm like, well, which one worked? and, you know, the answer is
so
all.
So basically, Jason, you're top of mind. If they always see you out of the corner of their eye, and when they're ready, you're top of mind.
Absolutely. You can't be. You know, and in the online world, we really talk about top of inbox. So we're consistently reminding you that even though now might not be the time. I mean, I just did a big campaign in the cheer world, the cheer gym world, and sold, I don't know, a dozen or so websites yesterday, you know, where I just made the comment, you know, now might not be the time, but when you're ready. And I mean, and they're hit with that every single week.
Right.
In a different way, shape, or form. And what was interesting, I knew that now was the time. And I made an attractive offer, and I made it very simple for them to buy. And I made a very low risk for them to come aboard. And they said, that sounds great. Everybody wins.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're right about timing. And I have to kind of jump in with that because timing is everything. And I don't know about you, and this has been my observation over the years, but autumn and early winter, when people really want to make some changes in their business, maybe in their body, the holidays are coming up, summer is over. I can't put my finger on what it is, but I know this is a time of year when I make changes in my business, people always respond very, very promptly and in a very positive and enthusiastic way.
Absolutely. I mean, now's the time. I believe that, you know, right after Halloween up until Thanksgiving, it's prime time.
Exactly. I do too.
Nobody's spending on anything major aside from getting ready for Christmas and the holidays. So,
mm-hmm. And if you're in the physical fitness arena, you know, if you're a gym or if you're something like you, and even online entrepreneurs, people kind of continue that thrust even after Christmas and into early January. February, you're pretty much done, I find.
Mm-hmm.
As far as bringing in those new big things. But that's just been my observation. It's been my experience over the years.
Oh, that's also another system. And one of the things that people get terrified when, you know, if they hear me talking about systems or I don't know if I want to be on a business systemization call with you. But I just say, think of system as this. Save yourself time, effort, and money. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all a system does. So make sure that, you know, it's nothing to be afraid of. But that's another system, you know, the timing system of what's your buying calendar look like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you putting messages out at the right time? Are you asking for the sale at the right time?
Right.
You know, if one of our affiliate partners in the chiropractic world really wants to do this huge splash last year, November 20th, And he's like, and I think it's going to be a great time. And I'm like,
Hey,
gosh,
the week
you know
before Thanksgiving?
Yeah, you know your niche way better than me, but that sounds really close to bumping up to a holiday. Why don't we delay it, you know, 2 months and or bump it up a month? No, this will work well. And shockingly, it was a horrific campaign as far as results were concerned. But, again, it's just a matter of how often do you whip out that ginormous year-at-a-glance calendar and really look at, you know, which marketing campaigns need to happen. You know, we always did in November, we would do the whole next year. And we planned out the entire next year, because December is a terrible month to do it because you're thinking about, you know, presents and holiday parties and stuff.
Traveling, so, right.
Yeah, the end of November, we busted it out, and okay, here's the deal. It's just as easy to plan out 1 month of marketing as it is to plan out 12.
It really is. And, you know, again, it goes kind of back to Michael Gerber. I mean, you don't know what you can't see. You can't hit a target you can't see. And, I mean, you can lay out a plan, and it can change, it can tweak, but you've got to have something to look at, something that you can strive for. You can't just wake up, you know, the first Monday of the month and go, ooh, now what? I mean, that's no plan. That's no way to market. That's no way to build a business. And people do it all the time.
It's challenging, but you know, it goes back to if you're building a systemized business, which I really can't drill it into anybody's head enough, but it does make your life easier for the long run. It also makes your business saleable. You know, I sold that business in 2007. And basically handed them a fully functioning, very profitable, done-for-them business.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. You know, you're in business for yourself. You're in the weeds half the time, looking around going, okay, what did I forget to do? Oh, my gosh. And it never occurs to you that you should be making something, creating something that you can hand off to somebody else, and then you go play golf.
Well, and even that, you know, I actually had this conversation with my partner yesterday in the website business. He's the website genius. He writes all these encyclopedias on WordPress and all that stuff. So the guy's like a ninja. You know, and we were having this conversation about, he's like, gosh, it feels odd to me that we've built these systems in a way that I no longer have to be the one who codes everything.
I know. I've been there, done that. It's almost like you lost an arm. You just don't know what to do for a while.
Well, and it was interesting because I said, you know, let's think about this for a second. Your title has shifted. You've moved up a level on the org chart.
Mm-hmm.
And now your job is to make it as easy as humanly possible for everybody you're training to do what you do better than you did it. And I was like, so you're still doing it. You're still coding. You're just coding a system. You're not coding a site.
So he's basically creating an SOP, standard operating system?
Absolutely.
So he no longer has to just get in there all day, all night and do the work. He's actually training other people to just work by the SOP.
Yeah, absolutely not. Now he and his wife are hanging out on a sailboat today.
Nice.
So, you know, and I think we'll probably have 4 or 5 sites launched today. So it's, you know, and he'll go through on his iPhone and look and go, okay, everything looks clear. Let's launch them at 3 o'clock in the morning. We're good to go.
Right.
But yeah, that's.
So he's going to project manage after a point, you know, once he's got everything in place, then he'll be project managing. But
he and I have been working He and I have actually been working on development of management systems, which is something that I love to build. You know, doing the tactical work is fine. I've been there, I've done it. I always said, you know, I have no problem scrubbing a toilet as long as you are standing behind me taking notes or holding a video camera. It's fine. You know, it was funny. At my martial arts school, so our bathrooms are cleaned every hour on the hour.
They should be.
Well, it took 6 minutes to clean the bathroom. And I knew exactly, walk in, turn the light on, squirt, squirt, wipe, You know, clean this, clean this, clean this. And there was a checklist for everything. So a new...
But see, that's a
new
system. You know, you created a system and you have... And you keep talking about systems. And the thing is, we all have systems that we have in place every day. You have a system to get the kids up out of bed, onto the school bus, or driven to school. You have a system to feed yourself, feed your pets. We all have systems. So if people could make that mind move from the systems that we employ every single day to get us up and out the door and create that same mindset into our businesses, I think they would be a lot less resistant to it.
Well, of course. Well, but plus, the true definition of a system is whether or not it's documented.
Good point.
Okay. You know, we all have systems. You know, and I used to liken it to, remember those circus acts where people would be spinning plates on top of, like, long poles?
Yeah,
that's
seen
what I felt
that.
Like
that's,
when I was running my business. Okay, I got to go over here, spin this plate, go over there, spin that plate, and eventually plates start dropping.
Yes, they do.
I don't care how good you are at it. So, you know, also think about the reason most entrepreneurs are terrified to bring on an employee because they haven't the foggiest idea how they're going to train them. They don't know what to train them. So now, you know, we took video of everything. And if I was going to give your listeners the best piece of advice would be use video now. Use video and a virtual assistant. That's the answer. You know, videotape or have your staff videotape you doing something. Have your mom come in and videotape you doing something, whatever. And then have it transcribed.
Right.
I mean, I built our operations manual in, realistically, all the tactical systems in about 3 weeks.
Just by following yourself around?
Well, yeah. I had my program director follow me around with a big, clunky 8mm camera at that point. And she videotaped everything. I sent it to my assistant, who transcribed it, and then we sent it to a graphic designer who turned it into checklists. And it was very simple because on the bottom of every checklist, you know, there's a line for a signature. And that was the most valuable aspect of the checklist. So the last 2 years I owned my school, I wasn't there during operating hours. I was only there. I'd come in at 5 o'clock in the morning and leave at 10.
Oh.
So I'd get up, the dog would come with me, and we'd go and hang out at the school, and I'd do everything I needed. Now, the cool part was I walked in, and I walked up to my office, and on my desk would be the closing report, which was simply a checklist. And on various lines, there was how much income came in, how many phone calls, how many information calls, how many introductory lessons did we teach, how many new enrollments, how many upgraded enrollments, what cash is in the cash register, how many credit card purchases, how many pro shop sales were made, any O&Os, ovations or onions, anything I need to clap for or anything I need to cry about.
I have to say I have not heard that. I'm going to borrow that. That was my aha moment for the days of O&O. Thank you.
My pleasure. That, you know, and so I'd walk in, and I knew if there was something about, you know, we actually had a picture of an onion on the report, and if there were, like, there was a name and a phone number and a brief explanation on what happened, I knew that initially I had to call that person.
Right.
And then eventually it was, let me explain to you how you're going to handle this person.
Oh.
So, and then I came in the next morning. So there was no reason. And what I found was the business operated way better without me.
Really?
Of course.
Now, I have to ask, why is that?
Because I wasn't continually tweaking stuff and breaking my own rules.
Oh, gotcha. It's easy to do, isn't it, when you're the boss?
Of course. You know, I don't need a phone script. I know how to answer a phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Every time you don't follow the phone script, you're rewarded with not getting a student or not getting a client.
Oh.
I invested whole lot of time, effort, and money in building a phone script that converted people to coming in.
Right.
Why wouldn't I use it? Because it's me? That's ridiculous.
Gotcha. So what did you do during those 2 years where you were coming in and, you know, overseeing everything in the mornings and evenings? What did you do with your days during those 2 years?
I was growing powerful words.
Okay. Do you mind if we twist off to that just a bit? Because I'm fascinated by that system.
Sure.
And I do want to come, I'm going to have to ask you to come back another time because I have so many questions for you and we haven't even begun to get into systems yet. Would you mind coming back another time?
I'd be happy to.
Oh, good. I'd be honored to have you. But let's twist off to that system because it's pretty, I think it's very, very important. It's in how many schools now? 500, I think?
Close to 600 now, yeah.
Wow. Wow. Congratulations. So
Thank
tell
you.
Our audience a bit about that, if you don't mind.
Sure. So what happened was my wife built this character development system for our school, and it was fully comprehensive. It was everything that we would want in order to be able to teach personal development in very easy, bite-sized chunks on a daily basis. And we built it in a way that it became our USP or our unique selling proposition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that was why people were coming to our school. When people realized that we basically had a done-for-you USP as well as a full system they could implement, and be seen not just as a physical education center but also as a personal development center,
mm-hmm.
The light bulbs went off because, you know, my research showed that less than 1% of any population would be interested or could afford martial arts. But,
well, and that makes sense. I mean, not every – martial arts is something that I think you have to really, really want to do it. I don't think it's something you walk in – and go, let me take a look around and see if this is for me. I mean, has that been your experience? I mean, I think these kids or people, adults, have to really want to go into that.
Yeah, it's fringe. It's not for everybody. It's not like a dance studio where at some point anybody who has a little girl, at some point she does ballet.
Ballet,
and,
right.
You know, so, yeah, it's definitely more on the fringe. But, you know, also our same statistics showed that up to 40 to 50% of the population would be interested in more personal development training for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, see, that
makes
sense to me, too.
Well, of course, because if you tell somebody, yeah, martial arts is a ridiculous business in general. It's, let me teach you a skill that if you use it, you're going to get suspended.
Ooh.
Of course. So what we did is we said, you know, martial arts to us is about personal development. So we turned it on its head. Instead of actually it being about learning how to hurt somebody, and we're going to teach you that as well because I believe that the ability and the understanding on the importance of defending yourself and others you love is vital. But I simply said that we look at martial arts as personal development. So if you build your character, you're going to use that every single day for the rest of your natural life, and therefore you will be using martial arts.
Okay. So how did that propel – I'm dying to hear the backstory. I know she was working towards her degree. It seemed like it was a perfect storm. You both had these kind of simultaneous ideas that you were witnessing in the school and witnessing within your own businesses. It seemed like there was just some kind of perfect storm that came together, and you created it out of everything that was already going on. Am I right, or am I just way off?
No, you're spot on. And there were a couple really important factors. Having the DR in front of her name wasn't the worst thing. Now, also note that I didn't launch the program to other schools until she actually had finished her PhD.
Right.
And that was by design as well.
Well,
I wanted to actually
credibility. I mean, that's
of course,
you know, instant credibility.
Of course, and we wanted the opportunity to market the true product of our product. Is they actually any of my clients get a virtual PhD in child development working for their school? They have their very own personal development expert, their own child development expert, and because she's a nationally recognized expert. I mean, last week she was on Good Morning America. The week before she was on the Today Show. That's a regular occurrence, and our folks get to use that as marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all those put together, and there was a distinct need. You know, you want to make sure that whatever market you're going after is actually hungry. I knew the market, you know, and I also knew it was available and thought it was, you know, most of it was bad. So, you know, we were able to kind of show the value. We could also use our school as a case study.
And that had to help with the selling of it too. But so let me see if I understand the timeline. So did you launch the program before or after you sold the school? Must have been before.
Before. We launched the program in 2005. The head instructor at my school wound up moving out to Seattle. And the one thing he asked for is, like, hey, do you mind if I take this this powerful words thing with me? I was like, yeah, at that point it hadn't really gone live or anything. And I said, sure, no problem. Let me know what you think. And he went, you know, it took me a couple of years to get up. I think he had 100 students in like 3 weeks, 4 weeks. But all he was doing, he was marketing personal development first.
So he
took all the lessons that I learned the expensive way. He jumped right in. So that actually worked for him. And then he started having events at his school, and other school owners came by and like, well, where do you get this? And that actually, I said, well, okay, we can figure this out. So we'd given ourselves another 6 months because I found six other schools all across the country and one in Canada, and I wanted to regionally test it and see what our strongest markets would be as far as where I would put my advertising dollars.
Right.
And, you know, we found the Pacific Northwest was a hotbed for us.
Do you know why? Do you happen to have any clues about that?
What we found is, and this is basically just from talking to each of those clients, it's a more relaxed atmosphere, and the parents, most importantly, were looking specifically for personal development, and this fell right into their wheelhouse.
I'll be darned.
It's interesting. We have the Northeast, and we're large everywhere, but the Northeast and the Pacific Northwest are enormous. Obviously, it's big out here because, you know, my wife's on TV out here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
All, so people are smart enough to say, yeah, I want some of that.
And you're not doing all that well in the Deep South?
We do fine in the Deep South. Not nearly as big as Florida's huge for us, I should say. Florida is very large. The rest, you know, the Heartland is okay. Ours is not an inexpensive product.
That might be the answer right there.
Mm-hmm. And again, yeah. I'd rather have folks where they understand the value of what they're getting. Initially we could have another conversation one point on pricing psychology because boy did we learn a lot about that.
Oh, I bet you did. I think we need to have a lot of conversations, to be honest. But and you know what? We're just about out of time. I am astonished. Okay, so I want you to give me any more thoughts that you had on how that worked, because I think that's what I really wanted to convey to the audience, that you can take these great ideas, learn to market them properly. First of all, identify them properly, then market them, and then just really bring them to a spot where you feel like you can now go out and sell it to other people. And I may be getting that a little bit backwards, but...
No, the answer to that is simple. Sell it first.
Sell it first. Don't sell the physical business. Sell the idea?
Sell the idea. You could sell the business first. There are certain things that I've done I've actually sold a product before I built it.
Oh, I think we all do that. You have to get out and find out if there's any interest in it before you build it.
Absolutely. And what you'll find is there's nothing that will motivate you to get something done faster than like 30 orders sitting there.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's not uncommon. Yeah.
That's the first thing I would do. But I would also, I honestly don't believe that I've done anything revolutionary. You got to have laser focus, figure out what the product is, figure out who exactly you want to sell it to, and put it out there. You'll know immediately whether or not this is a viable product. You also need to make sure, is it scalable? What if we grow exponentially? You know, we crashed a server one night. I had no idea that was even possible.
It is.
Yeah.
I've done it myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a nonprofit site. I did it with a nonprofit. I mean, it went down instantly. I was so proud. You have no idea.
I get it. It's, you know, it was proud and frustrating both at the same time. So, but knowing that that was the case, I would just, you know, my biggest piece of advice for anybody is, first of all, don't listen to anybody.
Yep. I agree. I can't tell you how much I agree.
That, you know, especially, you know, your Uncle Ernie, who's had a couple too many at the family picnic, who tells you what you're doing sounds like a stupid idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't listen to anybody. Remember, I had to explain to my father-in-law, who was a corporate attorney for 50 years, why his baby girl, who was marrying me, was going from having a life of somebody in high finance to a karate school owner.
Mm-mm.
Did
he ever forgive you?
Well, when he saw what our school earned, quite quickly. actually, you know, I sat down with him and I said, listen, here's a list of the top 10 schools in the country. I plan on beating all of them. This is what they did. He's like, wow, last year? I said, no, last month. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, let's do this. So, you know, but for your listeners, I mean, the ability to just listen to their heart and their head.
Right.
But test everything. You know, again, Uncle Ernie might be right. but
he might.
but don't let him stop you from figuring that out.
I know. And I think that's one thing that entrepreneurial-minded people have in common. We're kind of pig-headed. We need to do it our way. We're going to fall. We're going to, you know, bang our knees. You know, we're bandaging hemorrhages every now and then, but we're still going to keep on doing it. There's something in us that just impels us to just go do what our heart and our gut and our soul is telling us. But, and I cannot agree with you more, test it. Don't just go fling stuff at the wall and hope for the best. Have a system in place. I mean, take that dream and make it work. But don't just get out there and go, hey, I'm open for business. Oh, geez, now what?
Well, nothing happens by accident, right?
No,
nothing
I
should
agree.
Nothing should happen by accident. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you have the time to go through and, you know, when I work with my folks on what's your strategic objective and what's it going to look like and how many locations and how many of this and what's your average, what's your gross income per month and what kind of net are you looking at? What kind of profit margin do we have? How many employees do we have? You know, what kind of colors are we focusing on? What is this? What are the 30 types of marketing you do on a monthly basis? What's your average client lifetime value? What is it? There's so many things to really look at and evaluate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if we change our pricing schedule, you know, what does that do to our profitability? What does that do to our conversion rate?
Right.
So, yeah, there's an awful lot we can play with.
There really is. Jason, before you go, do you have a newsletter or someplace where people can sign up to get information from you?
They can actually hop on to jasonmsilverman.com. That's www.jasonmsilverman, jasonsilverman.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can take a look there. What I do is anybody who's interested in having kind of an evaluation of your business, you know, usually I'll book like a 15-20 minute phone call with you to kind of see if it's something that I'm able to help with. And what I do is I do an awful lot of email blasts as well as blog posts as well as my new podcast
mm-hmm.
where you'll get a ton more information, and you can find about all that stuff on jasonmsilverman.com.
Excellent. Jason, it has been a delight having you here today, and I can't wait to have you come back.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, listen, everybody, the show is, we quit streaming, but we're still recording, and it will be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Jason Silverman. And I am wishing you a wonderful day. We are wishing you a wonderful day. And I will see you next Friday. Thank you, Jason. It has been an absolute pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.